Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. The year was 1925, and all eyes were on a courtroom in Dayton, Tennessee, where God himself seemed to be on trial. John Scopes, a substitute teacher, was accused of violating the state's Butler Act, which prohibited any public school or university from teaching any theory that denies the story of the divine creation of man, as taught in the Bible, and to teach instead that man has descended from a lower order of animals. Scopes and some of his allies had picked the fight in order to champion Darwin's theory of evolution in court. The outcome, it was argued, would change the very foundation of Western civilization. In the opening statements, it was ominously declared, "If evolution wins, Christianity goes." More than 1,000 people descended upon the courthouse to take part in the spectacle. The gallery was so jammed with observers that hundreds were left standing. Still more demonstrated for both sides in the surrounding streets. Americans leaned toward their radios to hear one of the first live broadcasts ever from a trial and examine their newspapers for daily accounts. Inside, the prosecution was assisted by the great commoner, William Jennings Bryan, whose voice and skilled oration were legendary. He was the Democratic Party's nominee for the presidency 3 times and served as Secretary of State under Woodrow Wilson. Bryan, by now an old man and absent from the courtroom for decades, returned to the law one final time to aid in the prosecution and champion his belief in the Bible. Another famed orator, the uniquely skilled and combative Clarence Darrow, stood ready for the defense. He was fresh from the infamous and widely covered trial of Leopold and Loeb, 2 young men in their teens who murdered a young boy for financial gain and to prove that they, as philosophically superior beings, could get away with it. As their defense attorney, Darrow had miraculously saved these young men from the death penalty and now, in the eyes of many, sought to take on the Bible itself. Eventually, interest in the trial grew so great that the judge moved it outside for fear that the floorboards of the courthouse would collapse. Thousands watched from beneath the Tennessee skies. You can imagine the heat and humidity of the hot southern summer sun sapping their strength as they strained to hear the two titans of oratory match wits. It's easy to picture the reaction of Americans across the country gasping in surprise when they heard for the first time that Clarence Darrow would be calling William Jennings Bryan of the prosecution to the stand as an expert witness on the Bible. Those present must have been jolted from the grip of the withering summer heat to fixed attention. Once on the stand, Darrow mocked the literalism of Bryan's faith, comparing the age of the Egyptian civilization to the Noah's flood account, and wondering how Bryan could explain Egypt or China if a flood really destroyed the world. Darrow summarized Bryan's answers as, quote, "fool ideas that no intelligent Christian on earth believes." Darrow lost the trial, but won the battle, placing Darwinian evolution as the preeminent theory on the origin of life. Scopes was declared guilty and fined. William Jennings Bryan died just days after the trial, as if the monkey trial, arguably the trial of the century, put to death the old way of looking at the world to make way for the new. It was survival of the fittest, and Darwinian evolution was seen as the fittest theory of all. Until 1991. In 1991, a Harvard graduate and University of California at Berkeley law professor published a book that put evolution back in court. It didn't seek to define a creationist account, but sought to find out how much we really know about the supposedly unchallengeable theory of evolution, to examine its claims, its evidence, and its philosophical presuppositions. That author's name is Philip Johnson, and his book, Darwin on Trial, tore through what had become established evolutionist doctrine like a tornado. 250,000 copies were sold. Newspapers, magazines, and television shows covered the controversy, and Johnson's bold willingness to challenge scientific orthodoxy inspired a movement of fellow skeptics to speak out and re-examine the evidence as well. Dr. Stephen Meyer, program director for the Center for Science and Culture and author of Signature in the Cell, remembers the inspiration skeptics received from Darwin on Trial.
And what Phil did, because of his courageous willingness to take this on without all the technical background, is he brought to himself a team of people who were willing to press the argument further with the technical details. And Steve Ferguson, soon after, he called them Phil's gunslingers, who saw that this guy had what it took to win the shootout at OK Corral, and there were all these young Turks that wanted in on the action just so they could fire their pop guns too.
Dr. Meyer also recalled the uncommon courage Philip Johnson displayed in even writing Darwin on Trial.
I have often said that the overwhelming dynamic, the overweening dynamic of this debate is fear. There are many, many, many people who have come up to the water's edge, who have seen the problems with Darwinian evolution, and have counted the cost and recoiled. And this has happened so many times. I was doing some filing yesterday, and in some ways it makes the heart sick. Brilliant scholars, scientists who have made approaches to us, who have talked to us. Some have come over, but many have seen just how much this costs and have been afraid, and then will rationalize a different position later. Phil had the guts to take this on. In fact, I don't even think he was aware of it. I used to think of him as a kind of wrecking ball.
Mathematician and philosopher William Dembski wrote, "Through Darwin on Trial, Johnson became a rallying figure under whose wings opponents of Darwinian naturalism could find community and solace. Up until Johnson, criticism of Darwinism was sporadic, and those offering the criticism were easily targeted. Johnson made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled critic of Darwin. In so doing, he gave proponents of intelligent design the conceptual space in which to develop their ideas." James Kushner, executive editor of Touchstone, a journal of mere Christianity, hails Darwin on Trial for freeing minds.
Phil is not making disciples or replicants, but he's firing the mind and imagination of others. And free of charge, with the light of honest inquiry, Phil's skepticism is born of a humility about man's ability to grasp all of ultimate truth.
Professor of biology at Lehigh University, Michael Behe, wrote, "After reading Phil Johnson's Darwin on Trial, I was stirred to action. From his tutelage over the years, I and many others learned to be effective public defenders of intelligent design and critics of Darwinism. If it weren't for Phil's intellectual and organizational efforts, there would be no intelligent design movement today. The entire intellectual world owes Phil a tremendous debt for kicking the shaky foundations of a suffocating 19th century worldview." Dr. Jonathan Wells, with a doctorate in molecular and cell biology from the University of California at Berkeley, as well as a doctorate in religious studies at Yale, described the impact of Darwin on Trial as international in scope. He admits at first he didn't even want to read the book.
A friend, an old friend, told me about a book that was just coming out called Darwin on Trial. Well, in the past decade before that, I had read many books criticizing evolution from various perspectives and was unimpressed by all of them. And so when I heard about this book by a lawyer, I thought, well, I'm not going to waste my time with that. But the friend prevailed upon me. I got the book. My wife, Lucy, and I read it. And when we finished, we wanted to stand up and cheer.
He went on to describe the book's power.
What Phil did for me in that book, and for a lot of other people, is not only smash the idea that the mechanism didn't work, he showed to me very clearly that the idea of common ancestry was basically applied materialistic philosophy. That is, the evidence for common ancestry is so thin that unless you assume materialism and the idea that all of this had to happen without any kind of divine intervention, unless you assume that, the evidence for common ancestry is pathetic.
Peter Luce, chairman of the Center for Intelligent Design in the UK, described the book as an evidenced challenge to arguably one of the greatest issues of our time. He exclaimed that it still stands as a classic, and it's not out of date, for sadly, the goal of most scientists is to ensure there's no divine foot allowed in the door. Johnson showed the way to lay the axe to the root of the tree. Dr. Norman Nevin, Professor Emeritus of Medical Genetics at Queen's University Belfast and one of the UK's leading geneticists, writes, "Looking back over the past 20 years, the publication of Darwin on Trial has proved to have been a critical turning point in the evolution debate. Philip Johnson courageously, with the clarity of an advocate, pointed out that Darwinian evolution was not merely incomplete, but was inconsistent with the scientific evidence. The scientific evidence not only had failed to demonstrate how life began, but also had failed to show how immensely complex biological systems had been created by mindless and purposeless natural processes of mutations and natural selection. Darwin on Trial ends with the image of Darwinian evolution as a great battleship on a sea of reality, engaged in a battle with reality. And Philip Johnson concludes, "In the end, reality will win." By putting Darwin on trial, Johnson proved Darwinian evolution was not exempt from the same rigorous cross-examination that Darwinian advocates had put creationist theory through in the Scopes trial. Johnson inspired a closer look at the intelligence evident in nature, the complexity of its systems, and the weaknesses within Darwinian theory. He inspired the intelligent design movement and, for the first time in generations, put Darwin on the defensive. The Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture honored the impact of this groundbreaking work at a celebration for its 20th anniversary. In upcoming podcasts, you'll hear from those who paid tribute to the work, courage, and inspiration of its author, Philip Johnson. To learn more about the book and its impact on the debate, visit darwinontrial.com. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of ID the Future. If you enjoyed this podcast, consider supporting the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information, go to discovery.org/CSC.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.